Blog Talk Radio.
Go for it. Go. Go for it. Hello, and welcome to Go For It. I am your host, Paul Gann, alongside Jeremy Espy. And for the next hour, we will be talking sports and having fun. I want all your opinions, all your ideas, and all your beliefs. And, of course, you will get a heavy dose of our opinions. The number to call if you have an opinion is 1-646-727-3070. That's 1-646-3070. And you can listen to this show at blogtalkradio.com. Click on the on-air button at the top of the page and look for the show Go For It under the category of sports. And also, you can send email messages to the show at goforit.gann@gmail.com. That's goforit.gann@gmail.com. Welcome. Hope everybody had a great day. And I'm just ready to talk sports. Go ahead, Jeremy.
Hey, Paul. How are you?
Doing well. Doing great.
Two more days, right?
A few more days. But that's on the back burner now because we're talking sports. We're talking sports. And specifically on tonight's show, we wanted to talk about athletes and money. And it's been in the news recently. You haven't heard former Celtics star, former Miami Heat star, Antoine Walker is broke. And this is a guy that in 12 years in the NBA has made in excess of $110 million. That's right. $110 million. And now he's broke.
I think, Paul, we're going to get into this in detail, but it's always important, you know, the media puts out $110 million, and I think it's very important to hear from, you know, from experts and from people that have been there and tell you that what they make and what they take home.
Hold on, before you go, and you're an expert, you are, if anybody doesn't know, this man is a CPA, so he is talking with knowledge here, so continue.
Well, not just me, but my beautiful, lovely wife, too, so there's two experts in our house. But, you know, it's interesting that everyone looks at the gross of what these players make. They look at the contracts. And they see, you know, like we were talking about Albert Haynesworth signs a $100 million contract. Well, A, it's paid out over a certain number of years. Yes, much of it's guaranteed. But there's an agent fee and there's taxes that have to be paid. So even on $100 million or $115 million over 12 years, there's taxes and there are agent fees and there's state taxes, local taxes. And you know, it for these players can get very complicated when you think about it, sure, you know, is $110 million over 12 years more than enough to manage, Paul? I don't think you and I are going to argue that. But when you're used to living a certain lifestyle, when someone hands you your first $2 million check and you blow that, well, what do you think you're going to do with your next $2 million check? And then you got taxes to pay for. Your agent needs his 15%. And by the time you know it, your 12-year career is over.
And I think also what happens in that situation is, if you look at it, you're a guy like Antoine Walker, you're thinking to yourself, there is no way on God's green earth that I can go through $110 million. So I can do these things. I can live an extravagant lifestyle. Like, for example, I was reading here in the Sports Illustrated article. It was, according to reports obtained during Shaq's canceled divorce back in 2008, Shaq spends a total of $875,000 a month. Now, granted, Shaq makes a lot of money and has made a lot of money in his career, but you think about it.
$20 million. $20 million guaranteed, Paul. But like, let's look at this year. $20 million guaranteed. So we can look at what that comes out to. He's in the high tax bracket, so he's paying about 36% federal. He's in Cleveland, and Ohio has a sliding tax scale. So let's say that the marginal tax rate is 5%. So of $20 million, minimally 41% of that goes to certain governmental agencies before any local tax. Social Security on the first, I think it's 150, so that's marginal on $20 million. But if you think about 41% of that goes to taxes, it's a lot. When you look at the 20 is less than about $11.5 million, and then he has his agent to pay, but his agent he pays on the gross, on the $20 million that was negotiated. So if the agent even makes conservatively 10%, well, that's another 2 out of the 11. So now he's left to $9 million. And the article suggests.
Let's put this in context. So the balance sheet is saying, okay, you're starting out with $20 million. You're saying from all those fees, agent fees, taxes, local taxes, things of that nature, that by the end, at the end of the day, Shaquille O'Neal from that $20 million is only bringing home about roughly $9 million.
Yeah, and it's the income statement. But who am I to correct you? But and then you look at $875 a month, Paul. You know, and that's close to $1 million a month. And there's 12 months in a year, which means in its totality, he's spending just about what he makes every, you know, under this contract because of taxes and agent fees. And now, look, he's at the end of his career. One would have to assume, and this doesn't, and again, he has numerous endorsement deals. So if you're, you know, if, to be fair to Shaq, if he's making, and he probably is making conservatively, another 5 to 10 mil in endorsements, even on paying, again, 40 to 50% out-of-pocket fees for taxes and agent-related expenditures, he theoretically will tell you he's saving that money. And we're going to get into this later, too, but what about the restaurants that these athletes open, the failed business ventures that they open, the bad investments that these guys are making? Right.
Record labels, that's bound to fail. That's destined for failure.
Anytime
you hear about an athlete and a record label, you know that's a failure. And you're going to bleed money there. I mean, and I want to go back to Antoine Walker for one second here. I mean, according to the Boston Globe article about Antoine Walker, he was supporting, during his playing days, he was supporting close to 70 friends and family members. And he built a Chicago mansion for his mother, which included 10 bathrooms, an indoor pool, and a full-size basketball court. And so you're talking about a lot of money there. And you got to remember, in terms of a house, you got to pay taxes on these on that home. You got to pay the property taxes. So if you think about it, you can see how you can go through $110 million. If you break it down, but on the surface, if you look at $110 million, you're thinking to yourself, there is no way that you can go through that type of money. No way. It's just no way. But Antoine found a way to do it.
And the sad part is, an argument you're going to be made, and we're going to certainly talk about this tonight, because I'm going to bring it up.
Are the leagues doing enough to protect these players in retirement? Are the leagues, you know, mandating that 10% of their, you know, contract be allocated to their retirement, which that age doesn't hit, you know, even at, let's say for an athlete at 45, maybe because of the fact that they're done playing their career much earlier than the lay worker? Should the leagues be mandating, Paul, you know, that there is a higher level, an increased level of savings to protect these guys really from themselves?
Well, in a lot of ways, there's really nothing the leagues can do. All the things the leagues can do in a lot of ways is educate and
well, they could negotiate that as part of the contracts with the players.
Yeah,
use.
I mean,
no, they can.
That's going to be kind of hard to do, to say that, you know, you have to put this money away and that money away because the league mandates you to put it away. I mean, I don't think anything like that will ever happen. And I think what the leagues can do, and I know some of the leagues have, are, you know, during like the rookie seminars and everything, they're talking to the athletes about their money and talking to the athletes about individuals coming out of the woodworks, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth cousins coming out the woodwork saying, you know, I got a business deal here, I got a business deal there, or you got the 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, and 15th cousin coming out the woodwork and saying, I got a record label here, I got a record label there. And all these things are being thrown at this guy, a young guy, young individual, and they don't know how to act. They don't know how to react. I mean, they figure, you know what, I'm going to be playing for a long time. I'm going to be making a lot of money. Why not do it? So only thing you can do is educate. That's the only thing you can do.
Well, but Paul, they can put in the, but they put it, they've put in, now many leagues have put in player conduct clauses because of the issues there. Why can't they negotiate increased retirement for these? They can do more than educate. I mean, if they want to educate, then we talked 2 weeks ago about raising the minimum age requirement for many of these players. If they're big on educating about financial, you know, planning, then is it really appropriate to have a 19-year-old, you know, young man playing professional sports? How can you educate a 19-year-old on issues that, you know, you really need to have a college degree to understand? Upper-level finance, financial planning, there's not many financial planners, Paul, that are 19 years old. There's not many financial planners that are 23 years old.
I understand what you're saying. I understand what you're saying, but I don't think it's the league's responsibility to teach you how to manage your money. That's something you're going to have to learn on yourself.
It's not managing your
money. It is managing
your money.
No, Paul,
it's protecting what the player really is, which the player is a dollar, Paul. It's protecting their investment. Their investment is themselves. And I think that at the end of the day, and you've been a big proponent of this, you're the one that is constantly saying that these athletes need to, you know, go for the biggest dollar. Well, at some point, shouldn't the league then recognize that they're bringing a 19-year-old and signing them to a $40 million or $20 million, or in the case of the NBA, a three to four year deal at a first round draft pick that's still going to make $6 to $10 million at 19 years old coming out of high school? Shouldn't the league be saying to some of these players, listen, at 19 years old, we have to protect your investment?
All the leagues can do, and I think all the leagues should do, is educate. And that's all you can do for anybody, is educate them on what's going on and what they can do in terms of their finances. That's all you can do.
I'm sad to hear you say that.
Once you educate an individual, what they do from there is what they do.
You're going to educate a 20-year-old young man on managing a $115 million portfolio.
That's all you can do is educate, maybe possibly put mentors in their lives, but that's all you can do. Otherwise, these people.
But they can get their money.
Support.
They can get their money back when Ben Roethlisberger goes into a club. They can file.
At some point, they have to be responsible and make the right decisions. Now,
but they're going to, and you know the Paul. You know the Raiders. You know the Raiders are going after about $9 million of signing bonus money from Jamarcus Russell. I mean, here on one hand they get to have their cake and eat it too, in that they get to say, well, you have player conduct codes, you have to have drug testing, you have to do this, you have to do that. But at no point are these leagues going to say, you know what? At some level, we're asking you to make all of these decisions and follow all of these rules at ages in which you and myself at 19 years old, Paul, we took our first job, we didn't have a player or a code of conduct. I mean, certainly, you know, you can't break the law, but these guys, many of them, are breaking laws.
It's great responsibility when you're making that type of money, and that's just the reality of it. That's just the nature.
But at 19 years old, who do you trust, Paul?
You got to find somebody to trust. All the leagues can do is educate. And that's all they can do. That's all they can do is educate.
Well, so you're saying they can't, they couldn't say, they can't take money from these players instead of giving it to their 16th cousin, which you've neglected to mention. They can't give it to their 16th cousin, but they can certainly.
I got to the 15th.
Right. And I want to remind you, number 16 is certainly important, but the league couldn't say, you know, to them, you know what, forget about 16 through 20. We're going to take the money you're going to give through 16 through 20, cousins 16 through 20. We're going to put that away for you when you're 48 or when you're 50 and your playing career is most certainly over, because we'll use Jamie Moyer as the benchmark and say good things can happen. Brett Favre, good things can happen in your 40s as a professional athlete. But at some point, you know, they are asking a 19-year-old, a 21-year-old to go out of the loan. But he, hey, here's you know, it look, the NFL draft just happened a month ago. These players' contracts are going to start getting negotiated in the next month, and you're going to see some of these guys getting signing bonuses. They're talking in the $40 million range. Never stepped on the field. Here's a check for $40 million.
Well, hey, that's just the nature of the situation.
Don't you
want to
take 10% of that $40 million and say to them,
I don't get mad at anybody who has an opportunity to make $40 million. Hey, you put yourself in that position, you earned that money. Congratulations, cast a check, enjoy your money. You earned it. And then that's the bottom line in terms of that. That's the bottom line. They earned it.
But, Paul, don't you want to take $4 million of that and tell the player, in order to play in this league, we mandate we're going to hold this for you, or you're going to put in the trust for yourself so that when you're 50, you will now have at least $4 million to draw on? I mean, I'm sure Antoine Walker.
I'm sure Antoine would love that right now, definitely.
Not Cousins 20 through 23, respectively. They wouldn't.
And that's what happens. And that's what happens. You have, like you said, I stopped at Cousin 15, but 16, 17, 18, 19, and 20, Cousin will be coming at you for money. It's just the nature of the situation. With great power comes great responsibility. And
I mean, we lived in Philadelphia. Living in Philadelphia, Paul, we remember the stories all the time in the daily news. You know, the stories of Allen. I remember vividly Allen Iverson's you know, friends and the crew, the posse, just leaving a brand new Mercedes in the airport parking lot and literally getting a limo for his mom when he comes in because they couldn't find the Mercedes. Geiger, when he bought his home.
I agree with you. I mean, these are crazy situations, crazy stories. But I mean, at the end of the day, all the leagues.
But they're true too. I mean, they're crazy.
All the leagues can do is educate. That's all they can do. What you do from there is what you do. But the league's responsibility is to educate, and it's not really their responsibility in a lot of ways. But all they can do is educate you and talk to you about these things. We're expected to be joined by Sean Salisbury, former NFL quarterback, to continue this discussion and talk about this issue. The number to call here is 1-646-727-3070. That's 1-646-727-3070. And again, you can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com. Click on the On Air button at the top of the page and look for the show Go For It under the category of sports. And you can send email messages to the show at goforit.gann@gmail.com. That's goforit.gann@gmail.com.
You know, Paul, I want to get back to, because I'm sure Sean will be able to really, you know, bring this point home, is that when you get these contracts, there's so many people now that have their claws in you, the agent, the lawyer, the CPA, the financial advisor, and there's the team as well. I mean, there's the team that's going to, 1 year, some of these athletes, because of incentives, can, you know, even in a base situation, like an average, you know, Joe Nook player, 1 year, because of an injury, they may make a guaranteed $575,000. But the next year, because of an injury and they hit certain playing incentives, they can go from $575,000 to all, you know, between over $1 million, sometimes $2 million. And again, is where some of these they may fall prey to the fact that well, now is when they put the down payment on the home that in 3 years they can't afford. Or now is when they thought to themselves, you know what, I'm going to invest in this. These players have people around them that are making more decisions for them than they're making for themselves.
And now we are joined by Sean Salisbury, former NFL quarterback. Sean?
Hey, Paul, how are you doing, buddy?
Doing well, Sean. We're joined by I'm here with my partner, Jeremy Yespe. I don't know if you heard part of the conversation.
I heard about 10 minutes of it. It's very intriguing, and I obviously have much to say about it, but you both make great points, so I'm anxious to hear where this conversation is going. I look forward to it. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for joining us, Sean. Sean, I want to start with a stat that I read from Sports Illustrated. After 2 years of retirement, 78% of former NFL players go broke. they go broke.
Yeah. Paul, it might be cheating them a little bit. It might even be higher than that, sadly.
It might
unless,
be higher?
Of course, yeah, it could be. Unless you're dealing with, you know, part of that 78% is guys that were picked in the first round or first round draft picks, and they usually last longer, you know, longer in the league most of the time. And there are those busts or guys that get those monumental contracts. But I wouldn't be surprised if it wasn't higher than 78%. And it's sad.
Wow.
Let me tell you guys a little story about that. And it's Jeremy. Jeremy's the co-host. Is that right?
Yeah, Jeremy.
I was listening to a great conversation. I love you guys' passion, and it was a great listen. And Jeremy, you make the point about these guys making money and try to mandate it. Here's the problems you're going to have trying to force the league. And I'll speak for the NFL, first of all, is that I can remember in my third year in the league, 1990 or 91, I was in Minnesota. And the Vikings, you know, the guy that they hired, and I can't remember who we had doing it at the time, but they hire a guy, and most teams have him, the league has him, that guy who is the one who handles like off the field, helps players get internships in the off season, you know, the player development mm-hmm. guy. And I can remember during the season, it was after practice one day, they had offered the entire team, it was either Prudential or one of the financial, really big financial companies, were going to come in after practice and be just give it just for 45 minutes after practice while you're after your showering and just give you a little overview on what it's like with, you know, the money to teach these guys and to educate all as you were talking about. And you realize I went into that meeting because I was young and there was four of us in there out of a 53-man roster. And do you know who the other two were? I was one of those guys I always want to pick brains because I'm not smart enough to understand these things, but always try to surround yourself with mentors, as you mentioned, and Paul, when you were talking about surrounding with a mentor and educating. Jeremy, you're talking about, you know, trying to mandate it and force it, and that would be a great – Jeremy, I love where you're going with that to say, listen, man, the chances are you're going to go broke. Look at these numbers. We're going to force it. Well, in that meeting, and do you know who myself, and I graduated from school, and I can't remember who the fourth body was or the fifth body. There was no more than five or six guys, and I thought – I'm still thinking four. It was – they had Darren Nelson, if you remember the running back. Guys,
I remember
Stanford graduate. And you know who else was in there? Steve Jordan, tight end Pro Bowler, Brown graduate. Now, when you think about these rookies that have signed big contracts, first rounders, and all the money that was going around that locker room, and in Minnesota at that time we had Dolman and Millard and John Randall and Carl Lee and Audrey McMillan. I mean, we had 9-10 Pro Bowlers every year, guys with big contracts making money. Those are the guys that showed up in that meeting. Now, when you talk about educating, this is why you can't tell these guys. They figure that they've earned that money, that they're a first-round draft picker, second-rounder, third-rounder, that you're not going to tell me what to do. And in truth, you can't. And that's the part when you, Paul, you're talking about educating, that these guys, you say, man, you've got a great opportunity. You're making all this money. If you'll just listen to these people that are experienced, that are grown men that have been in the league, or people that have financially advised millionaires of CEOs and companies trying to help you, to tell you what to do with your money. And you know what? That's how many people showed up to that meeting. And it's a sad thing, and you know what? Most of those guys may be broke as it is today. So,
and Sean, isn't that, though, one of the things that it concerns me is a lot of the times, and I'm sure you can speak on this, it's the financial advisors that the agent knows, it's the CPA that the agent knows, it's the lawyer that the agent knows, that right away is getting in the player's ear once they sign that contract and is telling a lot of these young, at a very young age, don't worry about anything. You chose me to represent you, and I'm going to do it to the fullest of my abilities. And they get these guys to believe that they don't have to worry about things at 20 years old, at 21, at 19 years old. And so when they're in these, you know, at these opportunities to learn something, they think to themselves, well, that's what I pay my agent that 20% for.
Yes, but and here's the difference. Jeremy made a great point. I believe, and I've gone back and forth over this a million times, saying it's the same thing with media training. Guys, we don't have that in the league. Can you imagine how many guys would make more endorsement money or coach or play if they knew just what to say at the right time? Just
exactly.
You know, we go through universities and just if you taught a guy how to do it, but everybody thinks they know how to do it. You can't be a doctor and a lawyer. You know what? You're specialized in one. Just like, you know, if you're an NFL football player, unless you're one of those guys who graduated with a financial degree, we all need help. And you make a great point about that. And a lot of these guys, here's what they do. They give their agent power of attorney. But here's the problem. Most agents aren't financial advisors. Most agents are just that. They negotiate contracts, and then they turn it over to somebody else to do it. And these players don't get it. Financial. And then here's what I can remember talking to a guy that was a teammate, made $1 million 1 year, and I say, and he spent it and needed a loan from the team to go into the next year. And I said, well, we were talking, and because I'd been in the league a while, and I'll leave his name out of it. And I said, he goes, well, I can't believe it went that fast. I said, well, wait a minute. Now you made $1 million. How much do you think you got from it? You know, didn't take into account taxes and all the things you've got to pay. And before you know it, he's $300,000 in the hole a year later. So you can't force these guys. And while they're young, Jeremy, you make a great point about the age. But you know what? There's a great responsibility. Now, if you have a family that understands it, that's one thing. Some of these guys may have broken families and don't get it, coming into $40 million when they're 18, 19 years old. But you know what? Then it becomes their responsibility to say, wait a minute now. I got an agent. Somebody, or find a mentor, somebody that sits back, or a teammate. They'll grab you around the back of the neck and say, listen, dude, you got great potential. But one blown out knee, one Marcus Dupree away, one Bo Jackson away from being done. So here's what we're going to do. Let me introduce you to some people, and let's do it. But guys don't want to. What they're thinking is, I'm 21 years old. I've got all this money. I don't need to go to this fine game. I can never spend this amount of money. And before you know it, it's done in 5 years because they're paying their girlfriend, their wives, 3 houses, 15 cars, and they can only drive one. And then all of a sudden they wonder, oh, that's right. The government's taking 40%+ of my money. Oh, my bad. And then when they're done, they haven't educated themselves. They have nowhere to go. And they realize that now you're going to work for somebody else who's going to tell you what to do for 40 grand a year. So there's positives to both. But I got to lean on the side that you can lead these guys somewhere, but you can't force them. And Jeremy, the other part is the NFL's never going to be able to mandate it. I'm going to tell you why. Because the players and the Players Association won't let it happen.
You're not going to get it. And I'm sure you, as a former player, could probably, it's not until, in my opinion, the former players, and we look at what Mike Ditka is doing with regards to, you know, the injuries, it's not until the former players really can start to mentor these young, because you're not going to get a young player this year who's, as I said, going to get 40, 50 million guaranteed to even think about putting large sums of that money away until they go broke.
No problem, Jamie, you're exactly right. And you know what they also need? Is what the league should do, and you know, some there's guys like me that would offer up help, or guys that would offer up help, or guys far smarter than me, or just to be, you know, not just to see where we stop is we go to the you get this rookie symposium, and it's not just the rookies, it's 4 year veterans, it's 6 year veterans, it's 10 year veterans. They still, after 10 years, many of them are clueless. We've all made stupid investments, but you know what? You can stop it if there's somebody there to help. The problem is for the rookies. Let's just use them for an example. There's a rookie symposium, and then nobody else. Then it's gone for a year. We don't have anybody constantly monitoring, saying, listen, let me help you with this. Not to jump down their throat, but to constantly be there for them. And if there's one thing I could say to these athletes, don't ever give anybody power of attorney over your money. We've seen sad stories about, you know, buddies of mine, when Junior Seau and Darren Woodson, they gave their, you know, their guy, John Gillette in San Diego, lost all that. I mean, we see cases of it all the time. And you say, how can a guy making $100 million or $50 million ever go broke? Well, look up and down the athletes of this world, and then look at the economy and how quickly it can hit, and then invest in, because everybody wants to see their name in lights or on the top of a restaurant, and don't realize, oh, my name's going to sell. Well, you know what? If some of these big name guys' restaurants go under, yours can too, because there's always a bigger name. So you better damn well serve good food. But the whole thing is you're so right, and it'd be nice if we could say, take $5 million and put it away. But these guys need somebody to lean to, and you know what? Well, what Mike Ditka's doing is special. I love Mike. But we also need, where there's a generation gap in there, if you're a 25-year-old, sometimes you need a guy who just retired or a 5 year retired to say, okay, listen, man, let me help you. I just got out of the league. I'm making 60 grand a year now. If you're a guy like that, just went back and now have to start all over again, you may have a lot of money, but you go back and tell these guys, listen, man, you have to understand, I'm making 60 grand a year right now. If I didn't save this money, I couldn't live the lifestyle that I led when I was playing. The problem is we're so caught up in this instant gratification, and the instant gratification is ruining athletes.
So let's talk about friends and family. In that same Sports Illustrated article, Torrey Hunter talked about going to his grandma's funeral and then having a bunch of people saying, hey, I'm your brother's friend from high school, and these guys are throwing CDs at him, throwing proposals at him. And this is at his grandma's funeral. Sean, is it really this bad?
Guys, I'm not Torrey Hunter. Shoot, I'm a mere smidgen of what some of these guys have done. But I've had people walk up to me when I was doing a radio show, and give me a CD about something they're selling. Of course it is. Now, at a funeral house, you know what that is, guys? First of all, that's just sheer ignorance and stupidity, too. you know, to come up and do that and rude and desperate and the rest of it. I understand we all need help or somebody to lean on, but it comes a place and time. The smart ones, the greatest word in the English language isn't yes, it's no. To be able to sit back and say, no, I don't care if you're my fourth cousin. I don't care if we grew up together and we grew up together and we went to high school together. You haven't been around me the last 20 years. You're not my family. I got 3 kids to worry about. I got a wife to worry about. I got a girlfriend. If I don't have a wife, I've got to find my parents maybe. My dad's too old. You know, whatever it is. But, you know, you've got to learn to say no, and you got to learn to put the guilt aside. Well, I didn't take care of my second cousin's brother's sister's fiance's cheater. You know, whatever it is. And there's plenty of hangers-oners. And I understand help. We all need help. But, like, the best thing, let me teach you how to fish instead of lead you to the fish and fish for you. And it's the same with that. Well, there may need help, medical help. I get that. But for somebody to walk up to me, you know, I don't have a problem anymore. And I've learned the word no over the years because I didn't used to know it. But I'll damn well tell you, somebody wants to come up and get in my wallet, there better be a good reason for it. And if it was something that was an investment, we've all had people approach us, turn it over to the guy that represents you and say, view this. My job, Torrey Hunter's job, Torrey Hunter's a dad and a baseball player. Torrey Hunter's not a music producer. Torrey Hunter's not an actor. Torrey Hunter goes out and plays baseball and does it damn well. And, you know, he's also not at the funeral parlor at his grandmother's funeral trying to take CDs to make sure that the guy gets radio produced or gets his music produced 4 weeks later. So the greatest word that these guys can learn is no. And you know what? If you lose a friend because of no, because you're protecting your talent and your investment and what you're about and what you've grown up with, guess what? Then you lose a cousin. Tough. And if it's a brother that's like that and he's only in it because he needs your money, tough, tough. You can help. But you know what I prefer to do? I prefer to go offer the help instead of somebody come to me if it's a family member and say, hey, by the way, I haven't talked to you in 12 years, but I saw you just won the lotto or signed a $100 million contract, Joe Maurer. Can I borrow $600,000? The answer is no. And I don't have a problem.
Sean, you raised an interesting point, which you know, and I'd like to hear from you. How hard is it at a younger age, and think back to when you were starting, how hard is it for these, especially these younger athletes today, to say to them, you know what, maybe that's where they can deflect to their agent, or they can deflect to their financial advisor, or they can deflect to the lawyer or the CPA and say, you know what, I'd love to help you, but hey, I signed power of attorney to my agent, so here's his number, and you give him a call. How hard is that at 23?
Well, you know what, it's hard, but boy, did you make up a great point. You know what you do if you're going to hire your posse? Hire one guy to be the bad guy. That's what an agent. That's why we all hire agents. Like, we all know our own talent. We're going to negotiate whether we're going to do a radio show or a TV show. I should be able to sell myself, Paul, Jeremy. You guys can sell yourself. You do a great job. But we all hire an agent because it's professional, and he can be the bad guy when there's a negotiation going on, and then all of a sudden one side, you know, ESPN says, well, we can't pay him that much, and I say they can, and then my agent goes and says it, and he's the bad guy. And before you know it, everybody's hugging and kissing, and everything's okay, just like baseball arbitration. He's not worth it. He sucks. And then all of a sudden, he gets his money, and they're hugging, and everybody's happy. So you've got to have a guy like that. Now, we keep using the age, guys. We keep using the age. If you're old enough to bear a child, you're old enough to understand the responsibility to hire somebody to manage your money or to be able to say no for you. If you're afraid and you're too nice to be the bad guy, then you know what? Put somebody in your posse on salary if that's what you want to do, because if you pay somebody $60,000 or $80,000 right now to be your go-between, you can put everything on and he can turn it over to the agent. Have him be the bad guy. Say, listen, I don't do that. I'm focusing on what I'm doing. Why do you think the guys like Jordan and Kobe Bryant and Peyton Manning and Drew Brees and LeBron James and these guys, most of those guys I just named started out young making big money. All of them did. But they all were smart enough to have a mentor, Warren Buffett for LeBron James, or, you know, to have somebody around them to say, that guy's a bad guy. You don't think, does it look to you guys like Kobe has a problem telling somebody no? Sure doesn't look like it had a problem with Jordan or LeBron James. That's how they do it. They were smart and surrounded themselves with good people that are smarter than them. And so at 22,
now, Sean,
23, we keep saying this age thing, guys, and you know what? I'm not buying the age thing anymore. If you're old enough to get drafted in the NBA or the NFL, you're damn well old enough to be smart. You graduated from school. If you didn't graduate from school, you had to go to some classes up until your sophomore year before you got drafted in baseball or whatever it is. You're smart enough to hire a guy to be your bad guy or to be your financial advisor or what have you. So, you know what? The greatest value is having smart people around me. Yeah, you're right.
And so, speaking, you talked about children here. And a lot of times, I mean, you hear the case of Sean Kemp, 8, 9, 10, 11 children. You hear the case of Vander Holyfield, a bunch of children. Now he's broke. I mean, how hard is it for these guys to resist the temptations that are out there? I mean, you're making lots of money. A lot of them are good looking, have great bodies, and they have the world. They have the world, and all these girls are coming at them.
Guys, you know
how
what?
Do you avoid it?
Well, you know what? First of all, groupies are groupies, and I'm not generalizing every woman. There's a lot of great women in the world. We're talking about the type of girls that we're talking about, right, guys? The ones where you go to a celebrity event, they're waiting down in the hotel lobby. The ones who want to get pregnant, have a baby. And you're the baby daddy and that kind. That's what we're talking about right now. Fair enough. I will tell you this. Hey, you know what? I don't know Sean Kemp. I don't know him. I've met Evander Holyfield. You know what? They may be great guys, and Evander was nice to me. But as far as their sex life and what they do, if they're dumb enough not to wrap it up with a double bag, then they ought to be giving the money away. And if you're going to father a child at a wedlock with 9 different women, or if you're Antonio Cromartie, then guess what? And that's your responsibility as a parent. You damn well better step up. And if you got to spend all that money on 11 different children, then maybe you'll think twice about the next time with the 12th. And, yes, there's hot women everywhere. Yes, these women are throwing at you. Yes, they give it up. Yes, they can come up to your hotel room. Yes, they lie to you. And plenty of guys lie, too. It's not just the women. My point is we can't keep making excuses for, oh, it's the girl's fault. Well, you know what? The girl comes at you. You do have the right to say no. I don't care how hot they are, because they're all replaceable. We all are. So, for me, if a guy's going to be crazy enough to have unprotected sex with some girl he just met in the lobby who's going to wants to steal his money and isn't in love with him, it's a one-night stand but wants to get pregnant so he can be the daddy and spend money, then he better be smart enough to wrap it up. If he's not, then you know what? The truth of the matter is, and if it happens once, oh, gosh, made a mistake. Twice. 11 times, guys? 7 times? 9 times? That's just pure stupidity. I don't want to hear how they were raised. I don't want to hear that guys were from a broken family. I don't want to hear – because, you know, we all got excuses. And somebody's got a worse plight than the next guy. The bottom line is CEOs go through it. You guys are radio guys. You go through it. TV guys go through it. It doesn't matter. Singers go – they all go through it. It's not just athletes. Well, how come we don't hear Michael Jordan having 47 kids out there? And Michael Jordan, walking off the street, they want to give it to Michael Jordan. Married ones too, I'm sure. But you know what? Because they – and whether it's one that they understand. They get it. You know, I mean, I hate to say this, but Tiger Woods has got 2 kids with his wife. And well documented on all these news shows, the problems Tiger had off the field, or off the golf course. Now, that's Tiger's business, not mine. He doesn't owe me an apology. But the fact of the matter is he doesn't have other kids out there. So apparently, Tiger, if he was going to do something silly like that,
found a way.
Yeah, that we know of. I'm talking about what's been documented so far. At least we know that for the most part, Tiger doesn't have 11 of them running around, right? At least he realized, man, I'm a big investment, and I know what some of these girls may want me because I'm Tiger Woods. So guys do it too. Girls do it too. We're not just putting it on, but there are the groupies, and there are the ones who just are after the money. But a guy's got – come on, guys. The guys, if you got to at some point in time quit – we got to quit enabling.
You
got to
protect yourself.
You got to quit enabling yourself and say, you know, enough's enough. We make mistakes. But you know what? I can tell you, I'm not making the same mistake 11 times, guys. Are you? I mean,
I hope not.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If you
got 11 million bucks,
I get what
then you're dumb too. And we all are.
Now,
so
Sean, I want to switch gears now. So we got a lot of listeners in the Philadelphia area. Donovan McNabb, do you think they should have traded him, the Philadelphia Eagles?
Absolutely not.
Why
trade your best player?
Exactly.
You know what? And then people say, well, you got – what'd you get for him? What'd they get for him?
A couple draft picks.
And Paul, that's one of the – it's interesting, Sean, you said that was one of the interesting things that, you know, that Paul and I, we both kind of cried about, if you will, is that it's a shame because he certainly has much, much less in the tank. I mean, whether they're going to win the Super Bowl with a McNabb or not win the Super Bowl with a McNabb, I mean, they got no value for a guy that's a top 7 quarterback and really who they're turning to play 2 games in his entire career. And they have drafted 3 young, you know, really talented receivers in DeSean Jackson, the tight end, Paul, you're the name guy, and the new receiver last year, 18. I'm a numbers guy. Paul's a name guy, and it's a shame to see this offense now in turmoil.
Yeah, and you know what? Hey, guys, Cobb may turn out to be great. And if he does, great. That's fine. You know, numbers. But to me, here's the way I look at it. Franchise quarterbacks don't grow on trees. Trust me, they don't. And not only – and I love Andy for – Andy Reid's one of my favorite people guys in the world. I've known him for 20 years, 25 years. I love him. But doing your quarterback a favor is one thing, but sending him in the division – you know what? I love you, Donovan, but I'm not going to do – I'd have sent him to Oakland so far away from us, it wouldn't even know what hit him. He's not getting anywhere near being
Sean,
quite –
Sean, do you think Andy knows something that we don't know because he traded him within the division?
Maybe. That's the one thing we're going to find out here in the fall. If there's something, maybe an injury that goes deeper or something that's far more than just Andy taking care of Donovan because they've been tight for a long time. I love McNabb. Now, I always love when I hear people, McNabb blows and he could win us a Super Bowl. I got news for you, Philadelphia fans. Without McNabb over the last handful of years, you ain't in the NFC Championship game, getting the Super Bowl without him. You can give me all the AJ Feely you want. Well, he came in and played well. You know what? I've been a backup in this league. I've started some games, been a backup most of it. I get that. But you know what? To sustain it for four games or five games or six games is not sustaining it for four, five, six, 8 years. That's hard to do. I think it was a mistake trading McNabb. You don't trade, and yeah, he may not have 6 years left in the tank, guys, but I assure you, you protect him, and with those receivers, he's still got plenty left. The Redskins got better. The Eagles got worse. That's just the bottom line. And if you're not going to get a person that's going to come in and make an instant impact for your starting franchise quarterback that's led you to Super Bowl, the NFC Championships, has been the guy on that team, then you can, you know, guys have come and gone at different positions, whether it's Doc or whether it's, you know, Trotter or what. But McNabb has withstood the test of time and has done it damn well and with class and grace and style. And you trade your best player. I got to get more for him, guys. I'm sorry. I got to get more for him. And the Redskins, one team's loss is another team's game. The Redskins got better by at least three or four games having him on their team. And the Philadelphia Eagles, now they find a way to pull things out. There's something special about those guys that find a way to get it done. But if somebody's going to tell me Kevin Cobb's better than McNabb, then I need to walk to Philadelphia from where I'm at in Dallas right now.
But the one thing you have to say about this Eagles team, they know when to get rid of guys.
They
usually are good at getting rid of guys at the right time. Now,
guys,
did they get rid of Donovan McNabb at the right time? I don't know. They definitely didn't get rid of Doc at the right time.
Doc ended up in the Pro Bowl. You know, you guys, we're going to – for us is that – we'll be able to answer this when we come on, and you know, if I'm on with you guys 8 weeks into the season, we'll have a better idea about this. But you're exactly right. It's hard. That's why when everybody says, "Well, this team killed it in the draft," well, I don't know who killed it in the draft. You know, all this. I want to know who killed it in the draft come week 7, week 9, week 12 next year. That's what I want to know. So we're going to find out because no two teams, franchises have been better in the NFL. Well, I'll give them. There's three: is the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Philadelphia Eagles, and the New England Patriots. It's finding a way and knowing when it's time for Lawyer Malloy to go. Knowing when it's time that you got to get and being able to replace him with somebody else. Those are without question and not close to the three best, all on the East Coast and all the three best that understand when it's time. I think the jury's still out on was it time for McNabb to go. For me, Philadelphia is better with him as a quarterback and with Mike Shanahan and that offense. Watch and see. As long as McNabb's, if there's not something seriously wrong, the Washington Redskins are going to beat a Cowboy team, going to beat an Eagle team, going to beat a Giants team during the season this year. I can guarantee it.
Now, Sean, we thank you for joining our show. We thank you for coming in. Great insight. You need to be
forgive
back
my,
on
forgive
TV
my
somewhere,
passion,
Sean.
Guys. Forgive my passion.
Oh no, I think Paul and I would joke and say, you know, we need to add a third wheel here. You fit in well in these parts.
Hey guys, I'm an unrestricted free agent, but I will not get 10 girls pregnant. And I promise you, I'll save my. it's to go. Anytime you guys want me on, I'd be happy to go on. I enjoyed the listening to you guys and going back and forth. Your passion was amazing, and I appreciate you having me on. And things will break for me. I'm gonna make the comeback better than I did the original. We've all made mistakes in our career, but you know what? It's going to be better for me. But having the pleasure to come on with you guys has been great. I love the topics and love your guys' insight.
Sean, make sure we got to have you back, and make sure you do come back. And
have
again,
me back anytime, Paul. You know how to get a hold of me, Jeremy. What a pleasure.
You need
Thank
to be
you.
On the air somewhere, Sean. You need to be back.
Well,
so let's hope you get back.
You know what I'm hoping for, guys? You know what I'm going to be on to be? A Robert Downey Jr. How's that? Go away.
There you go.
Then come back and everybody says, dang, okay, he's back. Well, let's hope so. I appreciate it. Lord willing, everything will work out fine. But you guys have been amazing. And like I said, you can call me anytime. I'd be happy to go on. If there's some issue that comes up, you know how to get a hold of me, Paul. And Jeremy, what a pleasure to be with you guys tonight.
Take care,
Sean.
Appreciate you, fellas.
Take care. That was Sean Salisbury, former NFL quarterback. He had a lot of passion. He definitely had a lot of passion. He great insight.
And that was it's certainly interesting, Paul. I mean, even if we go back to the very beginning, being the, one of the first stories that he talked about, it's just it's amazing, you know, to think about the pressure that these athletes they go through, you know, on the field, and then look at everything off the field in the clubs with 12 document, and now we're learning, you know. It doesn't end there. That these guys, it seems like it never ends for them.
And he made a lot of valuable points. And one of the big points that he made was in terms of the 11 mistakes. I mean, at some point, if you make 10, 11, 9, 8, 11 mistakes of the same mistake, you get what you get at that point. You really do. And unfortunately, that's what happens. And that's unfortunately what happens to a lot of guys. Switching gears now, we're going to move on to the NBA Finals. Series is tied at one apiece. Last night, the Boston Celtics, great performance led by Rajon Rondo, who came on and had it messed around and had a triple double. He had a great game last night. And he led Boston to victory. Also, Ray Allen, NBA Finals record, 8 3 pointers. Ray was off the charts last night, and that shot was great, and he was on. And it led to Celtics. He led the Celtics to the 103-95 victory, and the series is now tied at one. we're expected to be joined by St. Peter's College assistant basketball coach Marlon Gill in the next few minutes. He's going to talk about the NBA Finals. But go ahead, Jeremy.
Well, I mean, you know, you and I are tied 1-1 here too, and I have to say, last night, Paul, not that I'm trying to take away from a good win by Boston. Ray Allen doesn't show up last night, and this series is over. And I mean, I was surprised to hear Paul Pierce today tell you know, the Lakers fans that this series isn't coming back to L.A. because I don't know where he gets that from. The Lakers have really, you know, and Kobe getting into huge foul trouble last night was like, between that and Ray Allen, I was wondering if last night was like the apocalypse.
Well, it was a foul-filled ball game, and it was, you know, a lot of the Celtics players were in foul trouble as well. At the end of the day, it kind of came back to what I was talking about in a lot of ways. What I was talking about in this series. When you put a guy like Kobe Bryant on Rondo, that opens it up for Ray Allen. You got guys like Jordan Falmar, Shannon Brown, and Derek Fisher having to guard Ray Allen. Well, Ray Allen is going to shoot over these guys all night long, and he did, to the tune of 8 3-pointers. So when you have
Paul, not just 8 3-pointers, he was 8 out of 10, and I mean, I think like we recognize that's not gonna last forever, and that's why I say.
Well, you know, you're not gonna expect a guy to make 8 3-pointers. I give you that. Yes, you know, you're not gonna expect that to happen. I agree with that. No doubt. But at the same time, it kind of goes back to the point I was making earlier, the point I made last week. When you take a guy like Kobe and put him on Rondo, it opens it up for guys like Ray Allen. And it opened it up for Ray Allen last night, and Ray Allen had those 8 3-pointers. And he was, along with Rondo, those guys were the big reason why the Boston Celtics won last night. Paul Pierce had an awful game. Kevin Garnett didn't have a great game as well. And so last night you had Rondo, you had that backcourt which stepped up and led the Boston Celtics to victory. Now, I don't agree with Paul Pierce. The series will go back to Boston. I agree with that. I'm not Boston's QB, but the series will go back to L.A. But when it does go back to L.A., the bottom line is this. The Boston Celtics will win this series in 6. We have a caller. Hello, you're on.
Hello.
Go for it.
How you doing? This is Mark from New Jersey.
Mark, thank you. Welcome back.
This officiating in these finals have been horrible. It's just so many foul calls. And I'm the only one saying that. Is it me?
Last night was a foul-filled game, and in terms of an NBA Finals, you don't want to see fouls. You don't want to see the referees control the game. And quite frankly, they controlled the game on some level.
No, last night was horrific. It's getting interesting to watch. You know, I think some of these officials, again, they want to be almost like they want to be interviewed. I don't know if you caught the fight, Mark, on Saturday Night HBO, and the fight was stopped, and they're interviewing the refs, and I think these officials are getting personalities almost.
Yeah, I've seen the fight. That was a joke. That was a joke.
Well, I mean, Arthur McCanty's, if you didn't see the fight, Arthur McCanty was Roy Foreman and Miguel Cotto. I mean, Arthur McCanty did a great job there. He's a great referee, and he's a guy that takes charge.
No, Paul, nobody needs – we don't need to interview, you know, the refs at all. No one really needs to know what they're thinking, what they're saying. All it means is that they call another foul, just like, you know, in baseball, they throw these guys out because – they want to be on SportsCenter. You throw the coach out of the game, you're making SportsCenter. I mean, you know that, Paul, better than anybody.
I don't want these referees. I don't pay to see these referees. I would pay money to see Kobe. I would pay money to see Paul Pierce and these guys do their thing. I don't pay money to see these referees. And quite frankly, they took over the game last night in a lot of ways. And unfortunately, it was a game.
It got you a victory, so you really shouldn't be upset, Paul. It got you a victory, so I guess in a lot of ways.
Now, Mark, we thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Hello, you're on Go For It. Hello?
Paul, we're going to put this three-second rule in.
Carl, are you there?
Hit it, Paul.
Marlon? Hello?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, Marlon. We're joined by Marlon Gill, St. Peter's basketball assistant coach. Marlon, we've been talking the NBA Finals. Let me get your thoughts on these first two games.
I think they've really been, up and down. Game one, I guess everyone kind of expected that outcome, including myself. I think I looked at Kobe walking out of the starting lineup when they were doing the introductions, and you know, he just looked like he was on another level and wasn't going to be deterred from anything in that first game. Now, fast forward to last night's game, I think you saw the Celtics come in with a little more intensity, more focus, and with that being said, you know, Ray Allen's first half, which was huge, and I look at the score, and the Celtics are only up 6 at halftime. So, you know, it kind of lets you know that, I think the Lakers are pretty much focused, man, on trying to win this thing. 2008, I know they still remember that. And it shows, you know, even with the game last night, the Lakers, if they really put their foot on the gas and, you know, buckled down defensively and made shots towards the end, I think they would have had a chance to pull it out, even with, you know, Ray Allen's hot hand and Rondo's hot fourth quarter.
No, Marlon, and judging by what you're saying here, and correct me if I'm wrong, it looks like you believe that the Lakers will win this series.
You know what? I'm gonna have to go with that, man. I have the Lakers winning in 6, which is, you know, a little bit biased. I'm an East Coast guy. I would love to see Kevin Garnett win another championship, but you know, I haven't been a Kobe Bryant fan, you know, in the past, but he just looks like he's on a different level now, man, and he's starting to get it.
Marlon, go ahead, Bo. You seem to want to now be upset because he picked the Lakers, so I'll
defer
to you.
It does make me a little upset. Marlon, the way I look at it with this Boston Celtic team, I mean, okay, I understand Kobe is focused. Kobe was focused back in 2008. I understand the Lakers have all these pieces now with Bynum and Artest in the mix. But the way I look at this Boston Celtics team, you go through the Cleveland Cavaliers. You go through the Orlando Magic, two teams who were the two best teams record-wise in basketball. This is a focused team. This is a focused team, and you have now a big four with Rajon Rondo in the mix. I mean, last night showed me that I understand that you're saying that Ray Allen hit the 8 threes and at the end of the day the Celtics were only up 6 at halftime. But what this showed me is that now, okay, if you're going to stick Kobe on Rondo, Ray Allen is going to get off. And
yeah,
so I expect Ray Allen to get off.
I would agree with that. You know, Ray Allen will get off. But you got to understand, man, like, aside from, you know, maybe the Cleveland series and here or there in the Orlando series, you know, Kevin Garnett hasn't really showed up. And that's the big question mark. You know, I think Paul Pierce eventually will get off and you know, do the things that he's capable of doing. But, you know, I still think Garnett is, you know, you're kind of seeing the decline somewhat.
Well, Marlon, don't let Paul fool you. I mean, we certainly know you haven't seen Garnett, but last night I think we saw the emergence of Bynum. And, I mean, you said it best. I think this Lakers team in 2008, one got away from him. And I had it opted for Kobe's 5 fouls last night. Here he comes, Marlon. Here he comes.
Go ahead. That series didn't get away from him, but go ahead.
But, Paul, if you looked at last night, I mean, Ray Allen scores 30, but he scores 24 behind the arc. Kobe has 5 fouls before the fourth quarter. I mean, how realistic is that for Boston in the next 5 games?
I would have to agree with that, you know.
I'm sorry, Paul.
And let me just point this out to you guys, man, and this is one thing I've noticed. I know it's been brought up during the games. If you rewind to 2008, you know, Kobe was very reluctant to drive to the basket. And if you watch through these first 2 games, you know, he's driving the ball harder to the basket, you know, looking for the foul. And now, you know, he doesn't have now he has guys to pass it to, you know, dump it off to in the post. 2008, you know, let's be honest, he had scrubs. Gasol wasn't what he is now. Bynum was hurt, you know.
I agree with you.
And you know what? He's passing the ball now to Bynum. If you watch Bynum, he's not laying the ball up. He's trying to rip the rim down. And that's what you want out of your big guy. Gasol is trying to rip the rim down. You know, he's been labeled as a soft player in the past. And I think now just being around, you know, a guy with Kobe's intensity and, you know, his demeanor, I think guys kind of feed off that. And now you bring in a Ron Artest who, I will say this whole year he hasn't showed up. But, you know, he's still
He had a great defensive game yesterday.
Yeah, he did. But, you know, that's not what they expected. You know, that was, I'm guessing, when they brought him in last year, it was to be one of those guys, and he's not that, you know, to this point. And I don't think you will see that from him, maybe until next year. He's still trying to find his way here and there, but he can still give you a performance like last night of being a lockdown defender. You know, you rewind to game one, and you look at the first play of game one, you know, him and Paul Pierce almost get into it. That's what he was brought for. You know, and I don't think
now, Marlon, we got about 30 seconds left. Real quick, how do you see Game 3 playing out?
I see the Celtics coming out with a lot of energy at home, things of that nature. And that fourth quarter, it'll be back and forth. And I'm going to say this. The Lakers will win it somehow. And I'm going to say the Celtics the Lakers in 6, but I think Boston will probably win game 3. And Kobe will pick
Marlon, this is where we were joined now, but we thank Marlon Gill from St. Peter's College, the assistant basketball coach there. Marlon, thank you for joining the show. We want to bring you back for that NBA draft, so make sure you're available. We need your insight there.
No problem. Thanks
for joining the show.
All right. Bye-bye.
Well, we got about under a minute left in the show. It was a jam-packed show. We had Sean Salisbury join us. Incredible insight, great insight on athletes and money. We were just joined there by Marlon Gill, St. Peter's Basketball College, basketball assistant coach. great insight there also. And so we want to thank everybody who called, everybody for joining us tonight. I hope you enjoyed it. It was a great conversation, great discussion. And that's what we're about here on Go For. We're about great discussion. We're about opinions. We're about ideas, and we're about beliefs, and we want you to bring it. And that's what we do here. We bring it. Jeremy brings it. I bring it. Jeremy, you bring it, right?
Hey, Pot, you know, I'm bringing it, and just like Sean said, you know, to everybody out there, if you can have them, you know, you got to take responsibility for it. If not, what do you say, Paul? Bag it up.
I don't know. We got about 5 seconds left. Thank you for joining the show. Have a great night. Go for it.
Take care.